Blog Talk Radio.
Doesn't owe anything to the clerk at the motor vehicle department who processes driver's licenses.
what I hear Romney saying, and I suspect many others will also hear, is that the little people don't contribute and don't count. I don't know whether Romney's sons ever rode the school bus to school. I do know that for most parents, it matters greatly who picks up their children in the morning and drops them off in the afternoon. And it may not be the driver's job to help the algebra homework, but he or she bears enormous responsibility for safety handling the most precious cargo imaginable. A good bus driver gets to know the children, maintains order and discipline, blah, 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 blah. And in fact, the first adult to whom the child probably displays a report card with all A's.
School bus drivers don't make a lot of money, nor for that matter do the clerks who help keep unqualified drivers in unsafe vehicles off the streets. But these workers are not mere cogs in the machine designed to service those who make more money. They are part of a community. The same is true of teachers, police officers, firefighters, and others, whom Romney and Ryan dismiss as minions of big government rather than public servants. And what do the Republicans offer their supposed heroes, the entrepreneurs who start small businesses? Those few who succeed wildly would be rewarded with tax cuts so huge that they, like Romney, might one day have a dressage horse competing in the Olympics. Most of those who just manage to scrape by or whose businesses fail could look forward to only as much health care in their senior years as they're able to afford and not one bit more. This is a campaign Democrats should relish. The United States became the world's dominant economic, political, and military power by recognizing that we are all in this together, school bus drivers too. Well, I think he has some really good points there.
He does.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way they make you feel. You're just in their way,
yeah.
Unless you're their servant.
That's right. That's absolutely right. That's why I resent these people so much.
But as I told you, I call them the madmen of politics because after that series on cable, Mad Men,
yeah.
You know, they're a throwback to that kind of era.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
Where women are just
even looks like
dressed up.
The star in the Mad Men.
Yeah.
And his wife.
Yeah, she's just a dressed-up window dressing.
Yeah.
That's all she is.
Barbie doll.
Yeah.
But the next article is more we've talked about this on the show before, but we've got more problems here with the Red Cross. They went on strike and
again?
Now they got more problems. Red Cross retaliates against workers. Members of the AFL members of AFSCME's Local 3145, the union that represents blood collection workers at the American Red Cross in Farmington, are standing up against an employer bent on intimidation and retaliation. In recent months, the Red Cross has fired six workers, all union supporters, who participated in last November's 10-day strike. The company has also suspended nine workers, eight of them union supporters, or union officers who went out on strike. And on August 16th, Council 4 announced it had filed
a federal unfair labor practices complaint against the company. A complaint against the company for its mistreatment of workers. The company's callous disregard for the employees should concern blood donors and recipients across the state, said Local 3145 President Nancy Newton, who works as a quarantine and labeling technician at the Red Cross. There is no place for this kind of corporate thuggery. This is the second labor complaint Council 4 has filed this year. We are the ones watching out for the donors and the recipients. For us, people come before profits, said Tammy Bennett, one of the fired workers.
Yeah.
Whoa. I mean, how friendly is the Labor Relations Board to workers?
Well, this is interesting because they just signed it. They just put up another new labor commissioner.
Governor Malloy named AFT Connecticut Union Leader Sharon Palmer to lead the Connecticut Department of Labor. For more than two decades, Sharon has been a tireless advocate for working people from all walks of life in the state of Connecticut. said Governor Molloy. Sharon has spent many, many years fighting for something I believe deeply in, the right to organize and collectively bargain for good wages and good benefits. I'm thrilled she's accepted this appointment. With more than two decades of labor relations experience, Palmer will work to ensure the Labor Department continues protecting the rights of working people across Connecticut. This is an opportunity to work with our governor and legislature to ensure that the rights of working people are respected, she said, from workplace safety to the right to form a union. Standing up for workers statewide will be our goal. Well, I hope she stands up for the Red Cross workers.
I do, too.
We'll have to ask Larry about this new appointment. And her name is Sharon Palmer.
Yeah. This was put out on the 28th of August. So let's see what it does.
Yeah, that's an important thing to find out about.
Oh, absolutely. And,
I can't believe the Red Cross, they just keep doing one thing. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
They just keep doing it.
And happy 77th birthday for Social Security. As we celebrate Social Security's anniversary, let's remember it has never missed a check. Celebrate Social Security's anniversary. Remember, it never missed a check. Despite Congressman, now Vice Presidential candidate from Ryan Paul's, Paul Ryan's claim it's going broke. Social Security has $2.7 trillion surplus. Going broke, really? And it's financially sound despite the recession, high unemployment, and stagnation of workers' income across the board.
It provides insurance against loss of wages for seniors and people with disabilities and pays out benefits in the form of survivor benefits to children who lose a working parent. Edward F. Coyle, executive director of the Alliance for Retired Americans, says the group will celebrate Social Security's birthday by reminding members of Congress to keep their promise to workers and thanking those who consistently fight against benefit cuts. In light of Mr. Romney's choice of running mate, Representative Paul Ryan, it's more important than ever to remind seniors and their families what the Romney-Ryan ticket means for Social Security.
However,
Coyle says, how ironic that just as seniors celebrate Social Security's birthday, Mr. Romney has named in Paul Ryan a running mate who wants to decimate the program. Romney and Ryan aim to cut out Social Security dramatically, even though it is self-funded and has not added one dime to the deficit. Mr. Ryan wants to privatize it, and at least since 2005 he's had that opinion. The Romney-Ryan plan would raise the retirement age and turn Social Security over to Wall Street, where it'd be subjected to the whims of the stock market, and all those people just want their hands on it.
Okay.
Anti-social insurance lawmakers like Ryan consistently use rhetoric and false information to scare people into thinking Social Security is in crisis in hopes that they will accept benefit cuts like raising the retirement age or changing the cost of living adjustment formula to a less generous index.
So,
that's pretty scary.
It is. And until people realize, what they're doing,
they do is they're listening to false information and believing it.
Definitely so. And it's frightening. It's really frightening to realize how duped they are. And what I'm going to do right now,
Larry's,
I wish you
Leo's going to call us to read. I'm reading
right,
while you're
typing. Don't do that.
Typing.
Okay.
I needed to put a light on, folks, so I could see because it was pretty dark in here. But we have a special election issue from AFSCME Works, which is our magazine. It's a magazine of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. And Lee Sanders, who's president, it talks about why November matters in this special election issue. And he feels it's about right versus wrong, and that communities, and it's really important that communities rally together to work to defeat the Romney Ryan budget. I mean, it's really scary. Just that piece that Leo and I read on Social Security should be enough to make the hair on the back of your neck stand up. And it's really important that people support candidates that are going to point.
We're calling Larry right now. Hopefully he'll be on.
Hello?
Hi, Larry. It's Lila. How are you?
Hey, good. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Are you deep into the Democratic Convention?
Absolutely. Everything. Republican, too.
Like yeah, did you watch the Republican one a little bit?
I did, just to see the nasty stuff that was going on.
Unbelievable, huh?
It was
unbelievable. The fascist state is encroaching.
Oh, gee, it's very, very, very scary, I think.
I do, too.
What scares me the most is the recent polls. I have to say, I was a major doubter as well, but, boy, the recent polls are frighteningly close with Obama and Romney. And what's scary is that is they stand for such a they stand for such different principles.
Well, their philosophy is so different.
Yeah,
and we read somewhere, I guess it was on your site, that there was an article. You know, Romney and Ryan, they just stand for themselves. You know, and for that 1%. Whereas
right.
Democratic Party is interested in supporting a community. And what I don't like and that people seem to fall for, I don't really understand why they think that a person who runs a business would become a good president. I don't see that those characteristics that cause a person to be, and I put quotes around it, a good CEO, are not necessarily the characteristics that make a good president. What do you think about that?
No, I completely agree with you. And on top of the fact that we really don't know truly what kind of CEO Romney was, we don't know how it is, he got into Bain, how much it enriched him, why he's moved so much money offshore, you know, what companies that they leveraged and bought out and ended up destroying the lives of the workers of those companies. I mean, the media has just done a horrific job of covering this guy. So part of the problem for me, Lyle and Leo, is, you know, you just made a really good point. You know, I don't agree. Just because you run a business doesn't make it that makes sense that you're going to be a successful running government. Government is not a business. It's precisely
exactly.
It's completely different. Government is about providing services. It's a nonprofit enterprise that's designed to ensure that there's a measure of decency and dignity and quality of life for people, whether it's our electricity, our water, our roads and bridges, our public safety, our school system, our parks, our rivers. You know, I can go on and on. So government and business are not one and the same. So making this comparison, you know, because a guy runs a business, I don't buy that. I think it's patently untrue. But on top of it, the media is so damn lazy, despicably lazy, and taking a deeper look at Romney, that they pass these platitudes along, and I think the public buys into it.
Oh, I think they definitely do, and that's what's really scary. Even if he, let's just say he was a good CEO, and
mm-hmm.
I don't think he was, the skills that are required for that kind of position are very different from what's required for a person in public service. I don't see that as a training ground for a public servant at all.
And when I say we don't know how Romney got there, I mean, we kind of do, you know. And I don't begrudge people their wealth, but let's just be real here. We're talking about a guy who inherited his wealth. He didn't do a thing to earn it. And then when he took some of that money got involved in Bain, played a leadership role. As I say, the leveraging of companies did lead to factories being closed down, workers being displaced, et cetera, et cetera. And then moves, his profits and his investments offshore to the point where he's unwilling to release tax returns, to the point where he's paying a marginal rate of about, I think, 14%, and most of us are paying much higher. I got problems with this. This is a guy born with that silver spoon in his mouth who has absolutely no clue, actually, what it's like to live without, a horse competing in the dressage. He really doesn't know what it's like to pay bills, to have a mortgage, to have health insurance concerns hovering over you. So I patently reject this idea that he's somehow qualified to be the president.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. The other thing that he reminds me of, I don't know whether you've ever watched that cable show Mad Men.
I love it.
He,
love that show.
That's where he and his wife are coming from. If you look at them, they represent that whole thing.
Right. I'm entitled to it. It's mine. I don't care about what's going on in the world around me.
That's right.
And the guy really has no principles, he'll represent anybody for any amount of money. You know what I mean? So
there's no moral compass like that group.
And sadly, though he was a Republican, his father was actually sort of an example of the old moderate Republican sector that no longer exists. Those Republicans who understood that you had to pay workers a decent wage, that unions played a role in the economy. George Romney was by all accounts, pretty decent guy. And
was he a Mormon as well?
Yes.
Right.
Yes, his father was a Mormon.
Yeah, in his political life, he never came close to embracing the hatefulness that the Republican platform has incorporated. It's really alarming that this guy is even at the point where he is tied in the polls and where he could win this thing. No doubt about it. I think you guys are right. I mean, a lot of people in this country don't vote at all. People are disenchanted. So this thing, to me, is way too close to call, as are a lot of key races.
Yeah, that's very scary to me. And there was something they said on TV tonight. Now, I don't know whether it was true or not. They said among working Americans that he had an advantage.
Blue collar Republicans, I guess.
Reminds me of the Reagan years. When the Reagan Democrats, the factory workers in Naugatuck Valley, who, were voting for a guy who busted unions, who drove down the standards of the working class, who launched this Republican revolution. And so it kind of scares me that we're, circling back to that same kind of mindset.
I don't know what we're doing, what we're not doing right, or what we need to do to make people understand that they're voting against their own best interests, not only their own, but their children and their children's children.
It's interesting. I see it. I got an angry email responding to those news clips that I send out, which I know you appreciate. And it's actually from a school custodian in your region of the state who, said we're a bunch of socialists and that he's a school custodian for Romney, So I sent him. Yeah, and I don't want to say his name or where he works. It's very close to you. It's in your neck of the woods in Connecticut. And, I was stunned. I just said, he wanted to be removed. I won't go into the whole email, but did call himself proud to be supporting Romney. And I just threw back a quote. I haven't heard back from him, but I just wrote him back politely. I gave him a quote from a recent article in which Romney said, we have to, it's time for fairness. And, we can't have government workers with better pay and benefits than the average taxpayer. So I just said, look, do you want to see your pay and benefits and rights cut? You know, because that's what's going to happen.
They always
can't make it. You can't make it up. I mean, it's nuts.
Yeah. They always think it's going to be somebody else. You know, it's not going to be.
I guess. But, you know, and again, it's just one person. But, you know, I worry that because I've, you know, you guys and I, we lived through the Reagan stuff. And, you know, people often vote against their best interests.
And it's almost like, I mean, I've had some discussions with blue-collar Republicans. And it's, when you try to talk to them, it's like, well, my father was a Republican, so I'm a Republican.
Right.
And that's, they don't go any further than that.
And they don't even know what it means.
And Leo talked to someone the other day who, you know, he's had some unfortunate turns in his life. I mean, he's lost his job. He has a major illness. His wife is on, his daughter is on Husky. I presume that he probably is too. And he's supporting Mitt Romney.
Right. And you know what?
And all of the Republicans.
The whole Republican slate.
Right.
No sense to that at all.
Do you think these guys are going to support funding that keeps the Husky program going? No.
Yeah, absolutely not. So when Leo brought up to him that, you know, this is really against your own best interest, it could throw you into a very bad position for health insurance. You won't be able to cover your family. Maybe they will cut benefits. He said, well, I don't even want to think about that. I don't vote on that.
Okay.
I mean, what do you vote on?
The complete, oh, man. I mean, it just.
You came home. You didn't even know what to say.
I didn't know what to think.
Well, you know, and this is the problem. You have a story. I have a story. Lila has a story. There's a lot of these anecdotes that start to pile up, and it becomes a trend.
Yeah.
No, it is. In fact, my book I wrote, that was one chapter I wrote in the book about blue-collar Republicans. I could not, the life of me, and still can't to this day, understand why they do what they do or think the way they think. I mean, they just totally confuse me. And not a race of people, but a species.
Yeah. Well, look, you know, the only thing you can say, the only thing I can thank the Republicans for what they did last week at their convention was their platform is just nakedly anti-union. There's nothing about a worker's right to organize. They want to have a national right to work law. They want to embrace the Wisconsin model and strip workers of collective bargaining. So it's a platform that is openly dedicated to the destruction of unions in the middle class. So at least, you know, we can tell our members, you think we're making it up, here it is. You know, and whatever your political persuasion, if you believe the working class should have a say and should be treated with some measure of dignity, then you better rethink your position on some of this stuff.
Oh, we just read from your letter what's happening with the Red Cross. You guys have filed a grievance again.
Another one, labor board charge. They fired several workers, fired six workers, suspended nine more, and all but one of them, you know, people who were involved in the union, active in the union, and all of whom participated in the strike last year. So it just, it's corporate thuggery is what we're calling it. You know, there's no other word for it. And I think they symbolize what's going on in the corporate mindset today, you know, that they can get away with this stuff. It's pretty appalling.
So
wonderful charity organization.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, wonderful humanitarian.
Now we have a new appointee in the Department of Labor in Connecticut. Is that that person seems like they'd be labor friendly, according to your article?
Yes, Sharon Palmer, who is the up until last week was the president of American Federation of Teachers Connecticut Union. So she's a great person, and she'll be a staunch advocate for making sure that Department of Labor carries out its mission. And it is the Department of Labor, not the Department of Business. The problem is, enforcement and getting particularly, private sector companies to behave properly. Very difficult in these days of under-resourced departments like that one.
Now, how long, you filed this grievance, how long will it take for it to be looked at?
Well, we filed the complaint with the National Labor Relations Board, and it could take, before it's actually heard and a decision is rendered, it could take 2 years. It's going to be a year to two minimum based on the last, we filed five or six of these complaints, and they were all found to be legitimate. It's just, the legal process takes forever, and I got to tell you, just circle back to our discussion about who the next president is. If we have President Romney, he'll gut the National Labor Relations Board to the point where they won't be able to do anything to help workers. The National Labor Relations Board found the Red Cross guilty of violating our members' rights. It, helped move the legal process forward. But I can guarantee you, if we have Romney as president, that'll fall by the wayside.
I think I remember they were unable to fill. Obama had to use
emergency the recess appointment.
Yes, right.
Got a good memory. You got a good memory because the Republicans continually fight having a full body of people appointed to the NLRB. And the NLRB during the Bush years never rendered one decision in favor of workers. So this is all pretty scary stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know if you must have seen Michelle Obama's speech last night.
Yeah. What did you think?
I was floored. I was floored by that speech, but I thought
in a good way.
Yeah, in a good
yeah,
way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, she's just an articulate, elegant, powerful woman.
But the problem that I had with that was it was heartfelt and so on, and it was almost as though she wasn't living with this guy. You know what I mean?
Right. Look at the position she's in.
The guy has escalated two wars. He's like, oh my God, he's just like doing all these things. He just let go all the bankers. He let go all the CIA torturers and everything. He's got one of the most corrupt. I thought Gonzalez and Ashcroft were corrupt, but this guy Holder takes the cake. And it turns out Holder, his clients, the clients of his law firm are Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, all of the crooks, when you see this kind of thing happening, and you see Obama's cabinet, and you look at the Fed, you look at Geithner, and you look at Bernanke, and all these people that are just continually screwing up, the system.
Yeah.
You wonder where this woman lives.
Look, Leo, it's the first lady. She has to, and she's going to stand by. I don't think you were expecting, anything different.
Well, I can remember her primarily from 2008.
Yeah.
Right? Well, she was really, she misspoke a lot. She said a lot of strange things that, and they radicalized her, of course, and so on. But she was very awkward with the media, or with the states. Right now, over the last 4 years, she's become extremely...
she's very polished.
Very polished.
Yeah,
very
good word. Yeah, good word. Look,
I have to say, honestly, she touched me. I was like, wow. And,
she's very impressive. She's very
like
impressive.
Like everybody else in that audience. But, to the same degree... For the opposite degree, Romney's wife did nothing for me. She just tried to make the guy human.
Pretty hard to make that guy likable. And again, think about, and that's a good point though. But think about what the contrast between Ann Romney and Michelle Obama, and
and their backgrounds and their commitments to what they to whatever their commitments are. But I as much as I wanted to believe her, and say yes, I could vote for this guy again, and maybe I'm feeling compelled that I have to in order to save, what little is left over, to save Social Security, to save Medicaid, to save pensions, to save government jobs, to save healthcare,
right.
Social Security and everything. You have to vote this way, if it means, unless you like the guy we were talking about earlier who said, I don't care, I just want them out, that kind of
thing.
Like,
well, you're not going to find any perfection, that's for sure, and there's some serious issues that I have in foreign policy with our government. That foreign policy never seems to change, no matter whether you have a Democrat or Republican there. It's always gone along in the same vein. I am opposed to a lot of it because it's an aggressive foreign policy, and I don't like all these wars and things. But on the other hand,
directed by the Council on Foreign Relations. They are the primary directors of our foreign policy.
It doesn't matter whether there's a Democrat or a Republican there.
Yeah,
but when it comes to domestic policy, I mean, it's the Democrats hands up. I mean, we need to have programs that for people who can't take care of themselves, we need to have jobs for people so they can. We need to make people productive. You got to give people a chance to get ahead. We've got to educate our kids with Pell Grants and with government loans. You can't put that out of the reach of the people. And that's
Well said.
I mean, it's just, what good is that going to do everybody? It's not going to make our society better.
Wanted to raise the student interest rates to 6.8.
How are people going to afford that?
It wasn't until Obama. I don't know how the hell he managed to compromise that down. He basically blackmailed, threatened them in some way that they had to do it, and they did. So they accepted they rejected
choice
the,
for all of the weaknesses. The three of us have had these discussions, and I don't think any of us are happy with the fact that, Wall Street has been, the Wall Street fat cats haven't been held accountable. But, the contrast is really stark, and that's the starting point. I think that's what you're saying, Lila.
Very dramatic, I think.
Yeah, we were talking to a friend of ours last weekend, she's very involved in community and everything else, and she's an activist. But she felt the same way about having to vote for Obama, even though she really was disgusted by so much of his foreign policy and so much of his other. She looked at Romney Ryan, and it's like, what have we got? What choice have we got?
Well, it's really terrifying when you think of the Romney Ryan ticket. To me, the effect they could have on so many people,
Bush Cheney.
Way.
I mean, look what Bush Cheney did. In 8 years, it just completely destroyed the country. Two wars. Trillions of dollars of deficits. Unbelievable. Virtually bankrupted the country. With that kind of mentality, and it took 4 years of a Democratic presidency to try to pull it out.
I mean, he's doing.
And who knows? I mean, I don't know. At least we're not. I mean, it's a slippery sliding road.
Oh boy, it is.
But
slippery.
At least there's some. There's some traction, it seems like. There's some traction. They're getting some traction. I don't know. I really, really have not convinced myself that this guy is Saint Barack,
Well,
right,
of course,
right.
Not a saint.
But
no
I,
saint
but
ever
I,
gets elected.
But it's like a choice that you got to make, I guess, you know. And starting to see the responsibility of that choice that I didn't think it would make a damn bit of difference in my vote would. But, yeah, I know what my voice makes a difference. I know people listen to this show, and I know they act on these things. And, you know, so, you know, if that's enough to get people to vote,
right.
You know, then it's important. You know, and then my vote is as important as...
everybody's vote is important.
And of course, and the biggest problem is that every time there's a malaise in the voter...
In the turnout,
the Republicans win because they rigged
yep.
the damn voting machines. You know, they rigged the election. Right.
Well, and that's why you see the voter suppression initiatives happening. You know, they're nervous, and they know this is very, they know that if there's high turnout, it's going to favor the Democrats.
Yeah.
That's right. How have you gotten any feedback from folks down at the convention? What's going on down there?
I've talked to a lot of the union folks, and, I mean, they're amped. People are having a good time. They're... and you're probably seeing some of the same things I am on Facebook and, you know, on tweets. People are really inspired and they're uplifted by the contrast because, you know, last week was such a hate fest, you know, hate government, hate unions, hate these people, hate those people. And, you know, there really is a marked contrast. So I think it's been pretty interesting.
No, you're absolutely right. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah, we just lost our amplifier.
Oh, okay. You there?
Anyway, that's what's going on. You're right. The contrast is unbelievable. Unbelievable.
So we'll see.
Yeah. And like I said, I think what tore me to prove that to me was that speech last night by Michelle Obama. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was a heartfelt speech and saying that, you know, we're trying, you know, we're trying, you know what I mean?
Yep. I was, you know, and I think it's going to give him a big boost, actually, a lot of these
things. I hope so, yeah. I hope so, because he really needs it. And, you know, you want to say something?
Well, I think we have a bit of a battle, don't you?
It's going to be, this is going to be a dramatic and nerve-wracking time when, you know, when we talk next month, who knows what will be, where things will stand, but it'll be interesting.
I know. I hope it can only go up after this convention. I hope we get a bump after this convention.
We need it. There's no doubt about it. It's we keep the faith, and it's going to be, look, it's neck and neck. It's going to stay that way. There's no reason to fear bad things. It's just people have to be engaged, and we'll be doing our part to try to make that happen.
I know you will. How do things look around the state? You travel all around the state talking to people. How do you
think
Connecticut is doing overall economically right now?
Well, I think, you know, I think Connecticut is in better shape than most other states. And certainly working people are doing better. The people we represent are doing better because
mm-hmm.
of the fact that we were able to negotiate a job-saving agreement. So, you know, I think we're ahead of the curve, and the trick is going
to
be the challenge.
To stay that way.
Stay that way. So.
Yeah. Well, we really thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks
for really
having me.
It's interesting to see what happens in a month, huh?
Stay positive, and we'll have more to talk about.
Okay. Take care,
great.
Larry. Thanks
Take
for being
guys.
With us.
Take care, guys. See you later. Yep. Thanks, Lila.
Yeah. Good night, Larry. Thanks. That was Larry Dorman.
That was Larry Dorman, Public Affairs Coordinator for AFSCME Union, Council 4 in New Britain, Connecticut. We're going to go to a little music break, and then we'll be back with some more news. see what the next one.
Well, I wanted to. That was just this. Okay. All right. Okay. There was a couple articles that were really, really fascinating me that I thought were should be read. New Pepsi sweetener is a mixture of dangerous carcinogenic chemicals.
Read that yesterday.
No, I didn't. No, we didn't.
I must have read it.
Well, we read it. We didn't read it on the air. Did we? No. Let me go quickly on that one. PepsiCo has decided that aspartame, a neurotoxin used in their Diet Cola products as a sweetener, is not sweet enough and are testing a new mix of artificial sweeteners that will remain its potency longer than high fructose corn syrup. Aspartame, too, has been proven to be highly addictive because it causes actual cravings for the toxin, and many find that they cannot stop using the product because of the severe withdrawal symptoms. Isn't that amazing?
Uh-huh.
All right. I can't even pronounce this word. But the new mixture of sweeteners being tested includes ascorbate potassium, or ACE-K. And the problem PepsiCo has with aspartame is that it's affected negatively in warm conditions and occurs during shipping before their soda's products arrive in retail stores.
That's breaking down.
Yeah. In 1998, the Food and Drug Administration approved the use of ACE-K despite its known safety dangers, and the chemical is mostly popular used in baked goods, chewing gum, and gelatin desserts, according to the Food Safety Advocacy Group, the center of the public interest. ACE-K, is a lab-created chemical that is 200 times sweeter than sucrose. ACE-K is suspected through research to have carcinogenic properties, yet this studied fact was dismissed and further studies were not conducted prior to the FDA approval. In testing performed on rats, ACE-K was shown to stimulate dose-dependent insulin secretions. In further studies, ACE-K provided more of the danger to male rats than female rats with regard to their signal toward being cancer-producing. And the chemical has a very strong aftertaste. To combat this phenomena, Kraft Foods began using sodium ferulate to mask its bitterness. Aspartame has been proven to be highly addictive because it causes actual cravings for the toxin, and many find that they cannot stop using the product because of the severe withdrawal symptoms. Now, aspartic acid, also known as aspartate, acts as a neurotransmitter in your brain, and it facilitates the transmission of information from neuron to neuron. And excessive amounts of aspartate in your brain kills neurons by permitting the invasion of massive amounts of calcium into the cells, and the influx generates extreme levels of free radicals that kill the cells, and the neural cell damage is caused by unwarranted use of aspartate, and this is why they are denoted as excitotoxins. And they excite or arouse the neural cells to death. Wow. Anyway, don't eat this stuff, folks. That's what they're saying. And new Pepsi sweetener. Stay away from Pepsi. You know,
because
not anything Pepsi.
Don't drink any soda.
No soda with aspartame or anything. But Pepsi, especially Pepsi, because they use human. Aborted feces aborted feces to
for flavoring,
yeah. I mean, it's pretty sick, folks. Now they're putting this stuff in. Here, maybe Lila would like to read a little of that.
Let me choose what I'm going to read.
Okay. And state-owned central banks are the real target for West's imperial war.
With any move made by the globalist controllers and the surrogates of the Anglo-American natal strong arm, it is safe to assume that there is really only one reason for the implementation of any given plan. Thus, the wars of conquest and aggression raging in the Middle East, Eurasia, and Africa are by no means working toward one purpose alone. Ever since the invasion of Afghanistan 11 years ago, a small but increasing number of brave journalists, researchers, and activists have been decrying the real reason for the destruction of entire nations and the tragic loss of life imposed by the hands of NATO and other Anglo-American forces, such as the puppet regimes located in the same regions as the targeted countries. Among these vassal states are the remnants of feudal monarchies like Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and Qatar, and others. Let me just go to this. In recent years, the first post-9/11 invasion real reasons have abounded regarding the various countries provided with, in quotes, democracy by the United States. These reasons include vast oil reserves, oil pipelines, opium fields, strategic positioning, no-bid contracts for the defense industry and military-industrial complex, and mineral deposits. All of these suggestions are both completely valid and accurate, yet as mentioned above, there is really only one reason for such an undertaking of military force. However, there was one reason for military invention that is really discussed and even in the alternative media in this context. The real goal is total domination by private central banking systems. It is true that both debt and the control of currency is one of the most effective means of enslaving an entire population without their knowledge. Yeah, that's what they did in Europe. They conquered through central banking and the euro. They didn't have to go to war with the states of Europe. They just conquered them by making them take the euro and then devaluating the country, the currency. Yeah. And that's better than going to war. That's what they did. Continually chasing financial freedom with no ability to pay off the debt and save for the future ensures that a sizable majority of the population will not have the means, time, or energy to resist the totalitarian methods imposed upon them. Likewise, it is true that by controlling a nation's currency, one essentially controls the nation. Governments who are beholden to third parties and private banks for their money are not governments at all. They are receiverships existing solely at the pleasure of the controlling oligarchy. As Mayor Amschel Rothschild once stated, "Give me control of a nation's money supply, and I care not who makes its laws." Thus, when one takes a look at the worldwide banking system, and in particular the amount of countries with government-owned, non-Rothschild-affiliated central banks, one easily sees a monopolistic system coming into view. In addition, when one takes a closer look at those countries with government-owned central banks, independent of Rothschild and major financial control, it becomes even clearer that maintaining a government-mandated structure of currency and central banking places a nation on a very dangerous list. Let's see who it is. Prior to the Afghanistan, we're almost at the end here. Prior to the U.S. invasion, the Afghanistan currency situation was already in disarray. In terms of central banking, the patchwork nation was a prime example of what not to do with a central bank, even a government-owned one. Let's see. They talk a lot about Afghanistan. Iraq. Iraq is yet another case where private central banking could be argued as a major factor in the decision to invade. It is another example of a poorly executed central banking prior to the invasion. And how about this? Libya. Yet, if developing an Iraqi central bank before the bombs finish dropping seems a bit premature, consider the case of Libya and the NATO-backed Libyan terrorists who announced the creation of a new central bank of Libya before foreign forces even became involved. Okay, how about, what's next here? Sudan. Of all, the destabilization of Libya was much more upfront and open than the campaign against Sudan in the latter years of the Bush administration and continuing through the Obama administration. this might be partially due to the fact that Gaddafi was better able to mount a defense against the forces of death squads and hordes of al-Qaeda terrorists and NATO bombing campaign than the teetering government of Sudan. Let's see. Future and current targets. Syria. In this case, the most obvious and recent victim of the U.S.-NATO juggernaut is the embattled nation of Syria. So far, the most religiously tolerant nation in the Middle East has been forced to endure NATO-backed death squads and savage terrorists. Coincidentally, Syria is one of the last nations left in the world that maintains a government-owned central bank.
In fact, there's been the cause of some consternation from the International Monetary Fund. In fact, in 2006, the IMF actually published its annual article
for consultation report regarding Syria's economic developments. According to the recommendations made by the IMF in the report, were suggestions of changes to the Syrian banking system.
So there we go.
Cuba.
Iran, Cuba, North Korea. And are all, it's funny, they're the axis of evil, aren't they? Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They all have central banks.
Yeah.
Cuba's 100% state-owned central bank.
Iran
North
is.
Korea has a central bank.
And Iran, too. Iran. Nevertheless, while Syria is still an immediate target of the NATO war machine, it only wins that distinction by a thin margin. Iran, even in some mainstream outlets, remains a close second, and they have a central banking and monetary banking system.
The axis of evil,
yeah.
Yep.
So that's what's going on, folks.
So we're right to the end of the show. Thanks for being with us, and thanks for listening to our union news. I think it's really important. Stay tuned. Watch the Democratic Convention. See what you think about their platform. And
yeah, and, you know, if I guess Democrats and Republicans alike are rough, but like Lilo's always said, at least the Democrats always are willing to kick back a few cookies off the plate to the people. And, you know, that's basically what we're at right now. Beggars can't be choosers, I guess, but we can at least choose to be fed, choose to keep our social services, and choose to, hopefully withdraw military and get out of these wars. So good night, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the show. And please tune in tomorrow night when we have a special feature for you. Good night, everyone.